finally, that I ask myself why an awful lot, why a lot of different things. I stand up here and endeavor to instruct us in the things that pertain to the welfare of our souls, and then I sit down and I ask myself, why did I frown and scowl and shout? And why do I sit down feeling like I've accused everybody here of being hideous sinners that there's no salvation for, when that isn't the intent? But I find that we're admonished in the Book of Mormon that we teach our children an everlasting hatred against sin. And this I'm sure of, that we persuade ourselves to have a hearty indignation against the things that are wrong, or we will fall into their snares. And we may not bring ourselves to condemnation, but we'll complicate our lives and make it more difficult. I ask myself, why do we do the things we do? And why do we like the things that we like? The only answer I can find is that we do and we like what we choose. Often those choices we make unconsciously. We don't realize that we're making a choice for ourselves, but we are. And our life is is ours. And somehow or other we get around and make the necessary choices for whatever it replaces. Why do I like the Book of Job that I read to you so much out of? I like it because it depicts our life to us as we see our life. If you remember Job a little bit, he was in a great deal of misery throughout most of what's recorded here as the Book of Job. And when we have miseries of any kind and distresses, we see them as being just as big as his was. His actual suffering, we don't know. We don't grasp what it was. But when you have an emergency of any kind, it's as big to you as Job was to him. And when you suffer, after a while, it begins to feel to you as though you've suffered forever, and as though you may suffer forever. And so it was with him. Our eyes are just as high as his. And if you remember that there is some pretty eloquent praise in that book, because at times he did feel elated over the things that he considered in the light of his understanding of God. And our lows are just as low, and he expressed some of the bitterest grief that you'll ever encounter. And you and I let ourselves also come into the condition of mind where our grief is bitter. And this is not entirely wrong. God has made us so that we have a nature that rises and falls with the things that occur around us. And he's given us, if we accept it, wisdom to temper that to some degree. But not completely. Another of the human traits that we find in here is how he excused his self-pity. Do we ever pity ourselves? Which of you don't ever pity yourself? Do I ever pity myself? I reckon I do. We'll find the whole book, fellow, just plain old and old. And it tells us how to get into it and how to get out of it. And then he accused his friends of coming down there. And instead of being a help and a comfort to him in his time of great need, he accused them of coming down there to torment him and to give him a hard time and accuse him of bringing all of the misery that he had on himself because he was so self-righteous. Well, he wasn't a self-righteous man, but he was able to see that he had done well, and he, when he pled with the Lord and with his friends, he said, I haven't done anything worthy to bring grief on me. And it was true of him, but it's often not true of us. But we do the same thing. And he worried to God. When he prayed, he worried. And when he went about his daily walk of life, he worried. Remember in the first of the book, it said that he rose up in the morning and made sacrifices and said, "Maybe my servant, my children are sick." Which of us who are parents haven't ever worried about our children? And said, "Maybe my children have done something they ought not. Maybe I failed to teach them. Maybe I haven't managed to impress on them the importance of these things that are so very important to me." My children, my parents worried the same things about me. Took me a long time to find it out. I didn't think they were worried one bit about what I was doing when I was out at night. And then I found out they were. They were worried quite a bit. But I knew what I was doing. I knew I wasn't getting into any difficulty. I wasn't going to go out and rob service stations, and I wasn't going to do a lot of the other foolish things that I hear of and know of. And they hoped I wasn't, but they didn't know. I knew. Same with Job. He hoped a lot of things, but he didn't know. They thought he nagged and accused them. My kids think that I nagged and accused them. I thought my parents nagged and accused them, and so it's been forever, I guess. So I've told you why I like a book about a man that was very human, and yet he was God above the common. I'd like to read a little bit of his story for us tonight. Not a very large amount of it. I've already given you all the excuses why I like it. So now all I have to do is pick up a little of the good part of it that I choose out and read it. This is the admonition of Eliphaz the Temanite when he answered Job because of his distress. I think Eliphaz was a pretty wise man. In fact, I like his admonitions better than the other of Job's three friends. Job 5:1. "Call now, if there be any that will answer thee, and to which of the saints wilt thou turn?" He says, who are you going to rely on? Who's going to answer you in your time of extremity? Which of the saints can you lean on? And he went ahead and told him, "Boy, these people are not that strong, not that great. Which of the saints you don't believe in?" And you know what he went ahead with then? Well, let's philosophize a little bit more. He says, which of the saints are you going to rely on? Now, do you suppose that Eliphaz was saying to Job, every good man that you know, every person that you regard highly, and everybody that you think of as your friend, if you ask him to come now and help you, is he going to deal falsely with you? Is he going to forsake you to this difficulty that you're in? Is he too stupid to help you? Does he lack wisdom? Does he lack godliness? No, that's not the truth by any means, is it? The same with you and me. Would it be unreasonable for us to call upon any of the saints for help in our times of extremity? Not by any stretch. But we should lean upon each other as brethren and sisters in the family of God. And knowing that we're also weak and unwise, and sometimes unable to give the counsel and the help that's needed, yet we need to rely on each other up to a point. And beyond that point, then we have to rely on God, because the wisdom and the abilities of men are not enough. And I wanted to impress us better that after men have done what little they can do for us, we need more help and more guidance than they can provide. So I want to read on again about the sixth verse of this chapter and read a few more. "Although affliction cometh not forth of the dust, neither doth trouble spring out of the ground, yet man is born unto trouble, as the sparks fly after it. I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause, which doeth great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number." And then he went on and recounted some of the wonderful things that the Lord did. He said, after people have done what they can do for you, commit your cause to the Lord. Because you're going to have grief. Maybe Maybe it isn't the nature that you see out on the earth. Maybe it doesn't spring out of the dust and all that. Maybe the earth doesn't bring forth trouble to you, but you're going to have some trouble in life. And the wise and cautious thing for you to do is to commit your whole cause to the Lord, because His dealings are completely above and beyond the grasp of the mortal. They're not bound by the limitations of nature and of mortal man. So He can go beyond, and He can help you when man can. And He can help you to understand your own life. And He can help you to understand the lack of others, so that you can be more tolerant of it. He can help you with that. He was saying that trouble will come and that God can deliver. Let's look over here into Luke in the 12th chapter, a reading that what it amounts to is a small takeoff from the Sermon on the Mount. But it carries this theme along just a little bit further. And which of you, taking thought, this is Luke 12:25, which of you, taking thought, can add to his stature one cubit? If ye then be not able to do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? He's given the people several examples. When he said, can you, by the strength of your own mind and mentality, can you add 5/8 of an inch to your skeleton? Well, you can. You may stand up straighter and appear to men to be taller, but you're not. You're no longer than you were when you were bent down. Though I don't argue the benefit of standing up straight. Nonetheless, he says, if you can't do something that small for yourself, why do you concern yourself with other things that you can't handle either, but commit your cause to the Lord? I was sticking Job's friend's advice in there in the middle of that. Don't mistake that for being a part of Luke. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not, and yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass which is today in the field, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? If God take care of the things that look like they should take care of themselves, how much more is he able to take care of you and me? How much more is he able to help us with the things that are beyond our human scope of abilities? Can you make a piece of grass grow? You know the things that it requires, but you can't do what it takes to make it do it. You can provide the mechanical means, and if God has endowed the seed, it can go ahead and grow, but you can't do it. Men have struggled for a long time, men of science and great knowledge, to duplicate the materials that a human body is made of. And they say, boy, one day we're going to be able to create humanity. But you and I know that that's a false, a vain, and a foolish hope. Because there is that which God injects, which they cannot, because they are not God, and cannot ever own the knowledge and understanding of God. Because that was cut off in the time of Adam. When Satan lied to Eve and said, you'll become as gods, God said, oh no, you won't. He hadn't endowed them with the power to become a god. He had endowed them with much. And he had to prevent them from living forever. But we're given fully to understand here in the Book of Mormon that they would never have risen beyond the plane that they lived on there. That they would have been obliged to have lived throughout eventuality if they had partaken of that tree of life. They would not have been able to arise out of the world. They would have been miserable. No man cannot become God. It's not given to him, and it's It's the justice and the mercy of God that that is within our scope. But he said, how much better, oh ye of little faith. Does that trample our toes? Does it make us pull them back in our shoes just a bit? Well, I hope it does, but I'm going to leave it there. The most that I was trying to bring up to us is that our destiny is in our hands. That we alone out of all creation have a destiny. And it is placed within our hands. But without God, and without a lively faith and confidence in God, it wouldn't be much of a destiny. There wouldn't be anything to hope for. And there wouldn't be any hope. But he said here, Jesus, that you did well off as Job, you wouldn't be forsaken. You trust the Lord. You'd be better taken care of than the lilies. And the Lord spoke also and said, you parents, you know how to do good for your parents, for your children. But you don't know the half of it. If you think you know how to do well for your children, just understand fully that you don't have any notion how well your God knows to do good for his children. Here we come to why again. Why have I fallen into this line of thought? Well, I really don't know. But these whys seem to come up more and more often all the time. Why has our life suddenly become so complex? We who have a number of years that we can look back on, we can see that it has. The life is not nearly as simple and not nearly as uncomplicated as it was not a lot of years ago. And we ask ourselves why. And we say, well, why don't our human encounters with other people bring to us the same responses that they did? Why are we falsely dealt with so much? Why do we find so many people to be incompetent? Why do people give us their word and say, I'll do such a thing for you at such a time, and you never hear from them? Why do you write to someone because something is unsatisfactory that you bought and they don't do you the courtesy of an answer? Well, after all, why did Paul prophesy to Timothy and say, know this, that in the latter time perilous days would be? Perilous times. What was it he said about that? Because God foresaw that man's abuse of his freedom was going to create perilous times. And that life, because of that, was going to become complex. And that you and I, in order to retain our sanity, were going to have to learn to rely much more on our God. There was a time in our nation when the people had to rely on God to protect them from physical violence from their neighbors, and to protect them from starvation and from cold in the winter. And they did lean on him. Compared to your and my knowledge of the gospel, they lived in an abundant state of ignorance, but they leaned on their God and they got along pretty well and the nation prospered. And now you and I are just as obliged to lean on God. We live in a time of relative plenty where we don't usually have to worry too much about where we're going to stay and whether or not it's going to be cold in the house and whether or not we're going to eat and whether or not our neighbor is going to want to cut the hair off our head and hang it on his greasy old belt and wear it for an ornament. But in order to retain our hope of eternity and our sanity for today, we're going to have to lean on God. And that God is going to be obliged to intervene against the course of nature because man has abused the privileges that God gave him. As simple as that. And because these things have been abused, you and I are going to be tried and tested. And if God is going to intervene in our behalf, we're going to be proved worthy of that intervention before that time. So we're just like Job. We're going to have some trouble. But that promise need not overthrow our mind. And we need to feel warned and moved to some zeal to inform ourselves better and to do better for ourselves. And we say that man has abused his rights. Man has taken the freedoms that the Lord has given him. And a lot of that is freedom from the day-to-day drudgery of feeding himself. Well, we know that's true. But not you and I, not the people of the Church of Christ. We wouldn't abuse our freedoms, would we? I can remember quite a few years of time when the people of the Church of Christ bickered so between themselves that they caused a lot of people to become discouraged and deformed, particularly the youth. And gave ourselves a bad name among our neighbors. Did we abuse our privileges? Yes, we did. Well, do you and I abuse our privileges of self-determination to the point that God needs to correct us? Do we need some adversity to straighten out our thinking and make us rely more heavily on the Lord? I'm very much inclined to think that the Lord will make provision for us to suffer if we need to suffer, and to be yanked around a little if we need that type of correction. Because above all, what we need is to preserve our soul. And it may not be as easy as just the same. I'd like to read now a little bit out of the 12th chapter of Hebrews. Chapter of Hebrews is very difficult to read a little bit out of. I want to begin at the first of that chapter because it picks out Jesus and shows him as an example to us of endurance. And that's really what I'm trying to say, is we need to learn to endure. I don't know what we need to learn to endure, but I know that we're going to need to endure something because I can see all sorts of adversity swarming around us, and I know that we're going to have to wade through it because we can't go around it forever. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Jesus, striving against sin, resisted until his blood was shed, and did it willingly because he could see beyond it, and know that the joy was worth the suffering. And that's what I'm trying to tell us. I don't promise you that your blood is going to have to be shed in the resistance of sin, but I do promise you that some and many are, and I don't know their names. And we need to be willing that it should be us. But viewing the joy that we know is beyond and the pleasure of being worthy of the Lord's kingdom, if we impress that in our minds indelibly, through the testimony of the Spirit of God to our souls, then it becomes much less to us. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as his sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? He goes on and expounds on this. He said, if the Lord doesn't ever chasten and correct you, you're not his child. You're some other. You don't belong. Because the son, the child that he loves, and he loves all those for whom there's any hope of salvation, He's going to correct. He's going to cause things to occur in your life which will give you abundant opportunity to repent and correct yourself. And greater.